From awaytogarden.com and robinhoodradio.com, this is Away to Garden with Margaret Roach, your weekly invitation to dig in and grow.
There may be no moment in the year when my friend Ken Drews and I are more grateful for the range of textures and colors of foliage that we made room for in our gardens than we are right now in the hottest stretch of summer days when spring's nonstop flower show is just a distant memory. Ken's here to talk about planning and planting for strong visual interest even in the dog days. So more in a moment, but first these messages.
Underwriting support for A Way to Garden provided by Color Blends Wholesale Flower Bulbs, a third-generation bulb company offering top-size flower bulbs directly to landscape professionals and ambitious residential gardeners on the web, colorblends.com. And by High Mowing Seeds, Wolcott, Vermont, professional quality vegetable, flower, and herbal seeds that are 100% organic and non-GMO project verified. On the web, highmowingseeds.com. And by White Flower Farm, offering a wide range of carefully selected and expertly grown garden plants. On the web, whiteflowerfarm.com.
Ken Drews is author of 20 garden books and gardens in a mostly shady spot in New Jersey, where foliage is a major driver that makes his extensive landscape design work. Whether for herbaceous plants closer to ground level or in his tree and shrub choices, he's always on the lookout for the unusual selection of a particular plant that has something extra, great leaves. I'm glad to welcome him back to the program today. So hi, Ken, how are you?
Hello, Margaret. I am fine, a little bit warm.
Toasty? Are we toasty?
Both sides.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, it's been hot. I guess the whole country, everybody's struggling with one thing or another. In some places, much worse, of course, than just hot.
One thing or another, exactly.
Yeah. So just to sort of set the scene, you know, spring is flowers, 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 I think. You know, I feel like, you know, the trees are flowering and, you know, the perennials are flowering, the bulbs are flowering, you know, there's a lot. And then I don't do a lot of annual color, quote unquote, you know, for summer. I don't know about you. I have a few pots, but not much, right?
Right, a few pots, exactly. And in the, as you said, it's shady here, but there's a little patch of sun, and that's where the daylilies are. I mean, the orange daylilies on the roadside will bloom in some shade, but I don't even want those. But the fancier daylilies are in this little bit of sun, and they're kind of over. They're ending, if anything. And this is the lull, the July lull, midsummer lull, which happens every year, in between those daylilies and maybe when the summer phlox starts blooming. So it's a quiet time, but here, it's time for leaves, time for foliage.
It's funny, my phlox paniculata, the tall phlox, have started. You know, they're already doing their thing. Yeah. So it's like, depends on which variety you have. And what I was thinking of with the daylilies as well, you could have many, many, many weeks of daylilies if you wanted to devote tons of space and have, you know, however many different varieties that were early, middle, and late season among daylilies or whatever. But, you know, in an average space, we're going to have a kind or two, you know, variety or two. And so we're going to have a, you know, not the maximum possible season we could from a particular species of plant, right?
I've got about 15 feet at the front edge of a border, which is where the daylilies are. And that's about it.
Yeah. Yeah. And again, if you had 20 different kinds, you might have a longer bloom, but you wouldn't have the mass that you have. Anyway, but the other thing I find flower-wise that does make me feel happy at this time, this as the summer heats up, is there's a lot of sort of shrubs and trees that do have white flowers that I feel refreshed by in a way, like the hydrangeas start, you know, the oak leaf hydrangeas, for instance, have been blooming here for a couple of week or two. And I just, those big white flowers in my, I have a big, big stand of elderberry, you know, native elderberry, and it just looked beautiful. You know, I can see it all from the window all the way across the garden. It's just, you know, just covered in white flowers. And that feels nice.
Well, it's even cooling.
Yes.
Or it looks cooling.
Yeah, but I don't plant a lot of summertime flowers. You know, again, I have like, a big mass of phlox in one spot. But it's not like I'm not operating a flower garden, so to speak. It's more of a
Right.
foliage dominated landscape. And I think yours is similar, and yours is even more structural in a way. You use a lot of shapes of plants as well. You're very particular about, you have some very dramatic columnar elements and other things like that that look good all the time.
It's really just because I'm in love with them. It sounds like I've planned it, but well, when I
Well,
get something,
unconsciously, maybe.
well, sometimes I'll move something, or I realize that something spiky might stop you in your tracks, and something low and wide might be feel cooling, or lead you to a place to sit or something. There are things that you can do with foliage. And I love the contrast and the textures and forms. And gee, I'm just in love with them.
So you just said lead you to a place, and I think that's an important part of what foliage can really do over a long season. If something has its leaves from in where we live from, May until October or whatever, that's a long season, longer than almost anything's going to bloom. Is it can lead you to a place, like you said, lead the eye. And friends years and years ago helped me to be more deliberate about like. My thing is gold foliage, about sort of placing gold elements of gold foliage, shrubs and trees, on axis from key vantage points like windows or places that I sat and looked out at the garden, to sort of say, come hither, pull me out, pull my view out, catch my eye all the way out to the extreme ends of the garden, and make these, as I said, like axial views. Lined by, along the way here and there, a gold element. Is that how you use it too?
Pretty much to just like you said, to catch your eye or to bring your eye to a place, and then in contrast to that, to not have the gold up close, maybe,
Right.
so that it does have the impact and be kind of theatrical.
Right, because gold definitely like comes forward toward you, right?
Yeah,
Like
right.
it, right?
Right.
It's a
Lights up the whole, right.
screamer.
And variegation too. Think when it's,
Right.
white on green, it just it lights up sometimes some of the darker places. We're lucky enough to have gold do that.
It advances. And whereas if you use like dark purple foliage, it's a little bit more of like anchoring, receding, like a little heavier, I feel like. It doesn't scream as much as it feels weightier to me. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I'm thinking about how much one can blend these colors in foliage, have the red go to reddish green, go to green, go to greenish gold. Can really make sort of spectral arrangements.
Yeah. So maybe let's talk about some specific plants
Foliage
that you
plants.
use or I use, that we use for, yeah, when we start with gold, sure. Because I think that's the most insistent one of all, and it's, I may have overdone it. but that's one. Are there some that you really are glad to have in the garden as you look out right now at this time of year when.
I'm talking to you, so I'm thinking about you, because I tried to grow, for example, Hacanocoloa macra aureola, the variegated forest grass, one of the few grasses that can grow in shade, and it was such a wimp, and it's so slow. And then I think I attended a lecture by you, and you had all gold, the variety all gold, in a big bowl. And I thought, well, I should try that. And that plant is fast and big, so satisfying and so gold. And even in shade, some things that are gold in shade turn green. They don't really last as long as they might in a little more light. But that's just wonderful. And my original plant, there's like three little blades. I'm not exactly sure why. I know they lack moisture, but that all gold anywhere. It's it.
That's a great plant. What about sh like shrubs and so forth? Or I don't think I have. I used to have a Well, I have some golden conifers, and some of them have gotten quite large. The big I have a couple of the big meta sequoias, the Dawn Redwoods, I guess they are called, the Gold Rush variety, that are deciduous conifers. I have them up on the hill, so you can kind of look up the hill, and they call out to you, so to speak, from a distance.
Wow, and they're really gold for you? I mean, they really have color on the leaves.
Yeah, Gold Rush. Yeah.
Well, regular conifers that are evergreen, I just don't have enough sun for most of those. I do have metasequoia, and I do have water. That's one thing I have is groundwater, and they love that. So they grow really fast. But I have Ogon, which is the same, I think, as Gold Rush, actually.
I think it
And
may be Ogon. Yeah, and I'm translating it
it's
right.
just barely, you can hardly tell that it's different from the other ones.
Oh,
It really, and but it does very well, but it's not so gold when you don't have more sun.
Yeah, I would say it's not a screamer. Like, I have also some of the Chamaecyparis, like, for instance, the cultivar called Crypsii, Hinoki cypress, Chamaecyparis obtusa crypsii. And they've gotten very big because I've been here a long time. They're like trees now, and they are very gold, compared to the metasequoia. And they are evergreen conifers. But yeah, and so
Okay.
those are things that, I'm glad to always have them. And then I have a lot of deciduous things, especially shrubs that are gold, like a gold leaf mock orange shrub,
Oh,
and
right.
a gold Spirea ogon. Speaking of that word ogon, that Japanese word for gold, that's a variety name of a lot of things. And that are at a distance, again, acts on an axial view from a particular window, and it's like I just look out and there they are. They're the sentinel,
Well, I have a plant that's kind of new to me, which is Leucoceptrum japonicum golden angel.
So that's a
And
perennial, right?
herbaceous,
Herbaceous.
right? And it's a mint family, so it's not out of control, but it's a nice clump. I could make a hedge out of it, and it's in quite a bit of shade, and it's gold.
I have that too. I got it from Broken Arrow Nursery a number of years ago, and I have a big stand of it now.
You know what it looks like? It looks like pokeweed, sort of, the leaves.
And there are gold pokeweeds among native things, perennials. I guess pokeweed's a perennial. I don't know. It's sort of an odd creature.
It is odd because sometimes it's not where you put it. The next year, it's
Right.
someplace
Well, it
else.
definitely sows around. But yeah, and there are gold selections of it too, besides the straight green. That's the straight species. Do you have any different ones?
Well, I have a gold one that looks like it's splashed with green. It's really magnificently beautiful. I'm always sorry that it's kind of that the birds like it so much.
Oh, they move it around.
They move it around, yeah. But it comes true from seed. A lot of these plants don't. You know, a lot of things that have variegation, when they sow, they come up green, unfortunately.
Right. And there's a variety that you can get seeds for that's completely gold, called Sunny Side Up, I think. That's really screaming gold, and it can get to like 6 or 7 feet, a pokeweed.
Woo.
Phytolacca, yeah, Phytolacca americana. And I love pokeweed. I mean, I know that it's got that weed word in it, and that always is a deterrent to people, but I love it. And all the parts are poisonous, other than the young leaves. Some people do saute the young leaves, but other than that, everything else, once it's not completely tender little young leaves, and anything raw, and any of the other parts, are all poisonous to mammals. So it's not animals who eat the fruit, it's birds, because it's not harmful to them. Yeah. So that's kind of fun to see a bird picking over those, because they're such a amazing color. They're like a violet purplish color, really
Yeah,
beautiful.
and they'll stain your hands.
Indeed.
And
Indeed, indeed.
a beautiful color.
So key placement of some gold things. What about, and so and variegated also, it's going to again advance visually, like, come feel like it's pulling you closer. and act like a beacon to a spot
Right.
that's maybe farther
And the
away.
variegated can be yellow and green or splashed with green, like that phytolacca, or white, often very often white and green or gray green. Sometimes it starts out golden green and then changes to cream and green. I have a wonderful tree, Cornus controversa variegata. Remember how we all wanted that plant years ago? And my, oh gosh, mine is over 30 years old now. It's sort of like a wedding cake tree, you know, it's in tiers. It's beautiful. But there's native ones too. I have a wonderful Cirsus canadensis called Silver Cloud. There's a couple of variegated ones, and the leaves are almost white. And sometimes I wonder how it's alive.
So that's a red bud, the Cirsus canadensis.
Right, a red bud. And it actually has the same flowers, but the leaves are practically white and
Oh,
heart-shaped. It's very pretty.
this
There's a couple of them.
this past year I got a in a place where I had years ago a red-leafed barberry, which of course we've all gotten rid of all our barberries because we've learned how damaging barberries are to the environment, the wider environment, as birds move the fruits around into woodlands and so forth. I had this empty space and I wanted that, you know, purpley reddish color again, and I got a Cirsus, a weeping
Oh, yeah.
Cirsus that is, I think it's called Ruby Falls, maybe.
That's, I think you're right.
Yeah, and it's interesting to watch it start to shape up. It's not, you know, it hasn't. It's just settling in still, but it's gonna. It's pushing. You know, it's starting to take off a little bit. So that's
It's
going to be
got the
fun.
dark red, wine red kind of like forest
Yes.
pansy.
Yes, exactly. So that's going to be fun to have that take shape. And in that color, I also love, I have a very old nine bark or physocarpus, the one that's Diablo. Yeah, and that really attracts attention at a distance, even though it's dark colored, you know, and recedes in a sense visually. It's big and bodacious.
You know, it's like zone two or something. It's
Yeah,
really
it's yeah,
super pretty.
Pacific, I think they're Pacific North, are they Northwestern
I
natives,
don't
I
know. I've seen
believe.
them in Canada, so
Yeah,
it's
exactly. But I think they're Western. I think it's more Northwestern and into Canada. Beautiful. There's a lot of choices of nine bark. There's gold nine bark. Darts Gold is one of the originals, and
Oh, right. And
I've had that forever.
there's a dwarf one of the that looks just like it. I can't exactly remember. I think it's like Nana or something.
Right, but those are kind of the kinds of things that you can, you know, think about to add.
Those are just plant them and forget them things. Those are great for the outer edges of the property because they're so self-reliant.
Yeah, and I've with some of my older ones, I've cut them back. You know, I've made cut them back to the ground. You know, rejuvenated them, so to speak. If they've gotten too big or whatever, I've rejuvenated them, even more than once. So they're very tough creatures.
In Canada, a lot of people, for some reason, grow them as low hedges and prune them.
Oh.
And so in Montreal, you can drive around and see low hedges in front of almost every house of gold.
Well, that would be gorgeous.
I don't know how
Oh.
that happened.
Oh, interesting. So physocarpus has a hedging plant. Huh, interesting.
And you know, I know I've told you about my red peach, and I'm so interested in there are a lot of red leaved peaches, and I have a red leaf peach that I use as a cutback because it keeps pushing great, gorgeous new red growth. And now you're getting me thinking about so many things. I'm thinking about Cotinus grace. Do you grow that?
Right, so the various smoke bushes and smoke trees, yes, and I do have a Cotinus grace in a spot where I lost a Korean maple, right by the driveway when you first come in, and I put a Cotinus grace in there, and it's just starting to shape up finally after a few years, but it's indescribable, really, the color. I don't even know what color to say I think those leaves are. Do you?
I say blue green, and the new growth is kind of reddish, pinkish orange, and And the leaves
Exactly.
are
So
getting
you're
bigger.
basically saying it's a kaleidoscope.
And hard to, I think it's a hybrid with an American Cotinus, I think.
Yes, it is. I think it is with this. Yes. And it's just mine's flowering, and so it has those frothy kind of that kind of foam of
Oh, because it's right.
flowers
It,
as
because it's
well.
smoke
And
bush, and
yeah.
well, I don't let mine flower because I
Yeah.
want the foliage and cut it back. Usually I cut it back to about 2 feet every other year, but every like 8 years, right to the ground, and then leave it alone for a couple of years, and it comes goes to 4 or 5. Well, it's a big plant. It can go to like 8 feet, I think.
Oh, well, this one's much bigger than that
Oh.
because I'm not cutting it back. I'm trying to fill a
Oh,
space
cut
where a
with the
big
flowers,
tree.
right?
Yeah. So it's pretty big. It's probably 12 feet or so high right now.
You know, we're talking about tall things and big things, and it, all of a sudden it comes to my mind that there are variegated ground covers too.
Oh, of course. Of course. Yeah. But before we to go any further in color, because I don't want to run out of time, is the other element and by some of the examples we've been giving, we've been alluding to it, but not saying it out loud, is texture. I mean, that's the other thing, is to sort of paint these pictures with textures, right?
Texture and scale.
Right.
Ferns for ferny texture and things like, I know you love Dharmara, California native, Dharmara peltata, which has, it's funny, it has early pink flowers on spikes, like a almost a hydrangea ball of flowers
Right,
on
like there's
top
just
of it.
it's like naked. There's no other sense. There's a plant, but this spike with these tiny little flowers. These like assortments of little tiny flowers on it comes up out of the ground. It's crazy,
And then
right?
it fades, and then the leaves come up.
And they're giant. They're I think it's called the umbrella plant or something, and well named, right? Because it's
Has a
like, yeah.
wavy edge, and for me, about every third or fourth year, I get the fall color, which is spectacular.
I don't
Sometimes
get
the leaves
that.
just
Yeah.
turn brown, but some years I get red, like I can hardly believe it has great, great color. And there's
Huh.
a plant, another native plant that has big leaves, Diphyllia cymosa. I don't
Yes.
You know that plant?
Yeah, I've grown it for a long, long time. I
Really?
don't get fall color. I've had it for more than 20 years. I
I
think I
don't know
got
if that
it
has
from.
fall color. Do you get berries?
I do get some fruit, but I don't get fall color or anything like that. But I get. Yeah, I've been told that in our colder zones, I have it in the shade because I was told it was a shade plant in its native haunts, which I even forget where those are.
North
And
Carolina.
yeah, and I want to say I probably got it from like Plantalites, or maybe it was from Heronswood out in Seattle back in the day or something. I don't know, but someone put it forth years and years and years ago. And I think in my climate, I should have given it a little more light, a little more sun. That's the thing with a lot of things from the southeast. When you bring them up into a cooler region, you could have given them a little more light. Anyway, so
And it's funny
yeah.
because, and vice versa, because sometimes heat equals light, I think. Some things
Yeah.
that are grow in shade, I'll put in the with the west setting sun because
Yes.
they want a little more light instead of heat, although now we have so much heat.
Yes,
But
now we do live in Atlanta anyway.
well, I tried to grow Diphyllia cymosa. I call it a three-strike plant because I had to move it.
Oh.
And finally, I found a place in a lot of shade actually here, and it's alive. It's not fantastic, but and it's terrible because I love that plant. I love the flowers and the fruit. The
Yeah, it's
fruit is
beautiful.
beautiful.
Beautiful. It's a beautiful plant.
Yeah, and another plant I get really, I was going to say angry about is Astelboides. I cannot grow Astelboides.
Right. And I got that, as I've said many times on the show, it probably, oh gosh, it's got to be 30 years ago at a local botanic garden or nearby botanic garden that was on the route where I used to drive every weekend from the city to upstate for the weekends. And I stopped in, they had a plant sale. I stopped in and I bought that, and also one of the Rudgerseas, another big leafed plant that they had, both of them in the botanic garden, and plopped them in, didn't know what I was doing. And I mean, they've just been forever and lusty and whatever, and has a big, speaking of something that should be called the umbrella plant, that is a paler green than the Dharmara, but is bigger, even a bigger leaf across the diameter of the leaf.
Wow,
And
I can't even picture it. But I
yeah.
do have some tender plants in containers, mostly alocasia varieties. And
Oh, good. So let's talk about some of the tender ones in the last 2 minutes here, real quick. Yeah, good idea.
I try to grow colocasia, which go dormant, and I can never do it. And some of those have black leaves that are gigantic, like 2 feet, arrowhead leaves,
So
and
these
zinc
elephant ears
stone.
that don't persist in the winter, like a house plant.
Right.
Okay.
And I don't know, I just can't carry them over. And Xanthosoma is related, and that has chartreuse leaves. But the alocasias have been doing really well for me,
Huh.
especially carrying them over in the sunroom where it goes down to about 55 degrees. And I just am growing one. This is the second year, I guess, called Dark Star. It has arrow-shaped leaves. It's really big, but it fits in a pot. And it has black stems. It's so beautiful.
Huh.
And the amazing thing is, over the winter, usually they get mealybug or red spider, or the leaves just get tattered and kind of, and then when you bring it back out, it throws out a flush of new growth. Dark Star didn't miss a beat. It was beautiful right through the winter.
Well, we've run down our time, but between that's a great way to finish because I think even though we both said we don't grow a lot of annual flowers, we both do have investment plants that we stash either in our sunrooms or the basement or whatever. The other one being the pineapple lilies, the euchomus that we put up in pots. So I will talk to you again soon. Yes.
Thank you,
All
Margaret.
right. Thank you. Thank you very
Love
much for some
bowling.
inspiration to get through the
Yep.
dog days. Okay. Bye-bye.
Bye.
And I'll talk to all the rest of you soon again. I hope now don't miss an episode. You can subscribe free to the podcast version of the show on Apple Podcasts or on Spotify. And you can find me anytime at awaytogarden.com and on Facebook and Instagram as at awaytogarden. And happy gardening, including with foliage, meantime.
Underwriting support for A Way to Garden provided by Color Blends Wholesale Flower Bulbs, a third-generation bulb company offering top-size flower bulbs directly to landscape professionals and ambitious residential gardeners on the web, colorblends.com. And by High Mowing Seeds, Wolcott, Vermont, professional quality vegetable, flower, and herbal seeds that are 100% organic and non-GMO project verified. On the web, HighMowingSeeds.com. And by White Flower Farm, offering a wide range of carefully selected and expertly grown garden plants. On the web, WhiteFlowerFarm.com.
A Way to Garden with Margaret Roach is a joint production of AwayToGarden.com and the smallest NPR station in the nation, Robin Hood Radio.